Okay, so I think we are pacing ourselves quite well. We would have finished memory management by lecture 15. We still have storage and distributed systems topics to go. Okay, so I will add, I think we are comfortably placed. I'm going to add material on virtualization and cloud computing at the end of the course. It is useful material for you also, because the last assignment I'm going to include some elements of cloud computing. Okay. Yes.
So are we going to have two more assignments?
Just one. I don't think there is time to do two. We usually do three.
Okay.
Okay. So three exams, three assignments. That's the way it goes. Okay. Okay, so quick recap of last time. We started talking about demand page virtual memory. As you remember, we basically relaxed the assumption that a process has to fit in memory at all times, and that the process has to be smaller than the size of RAM. So with virtual memory, we can allow the aggregate size of processes to far exceed the total size of RAM, and we can even allow a single process to be bigger than physical RAM. Okay? The basic concept is you use disk as the store where you have all of the processes and their pages, and memory essentially becomes a cache for what's on disk. Okay? You basically fetch pages of a process on demand from disk into RAM. Okay. Whenever the process touches a page that's not in memory, you get a page fault. Okay. And then you service the page fault, bring the page in memory, and then the process can resume execution. Okay. Now, as the key thing that we have to deal with when we talk about demand page virtual memory is this page replacement. Whenever there is a page fault and you bring in a page, that has to be at the expense of some other page that gets evicted. Page replacement policy figures out which page goes out when a new page comes in. Okay, we've looked at three, or actually four. We said random is always a policy. Whenever you need to bring a page, you can randomly throw out a page, but then we look focused our attention on three policies, FIFO, opt, and LRU. Okay, FIFO just says first come, first serve. Opt says whenever you get a page fault, you look at the page of the pages that are in memory, you look at the one that is going to be accessed the farthest in time in the future and throw that one out, which says delay page faults as much as you can. Okay, we said it's optimal in terms of page fault rate, but not practical because it needs you to know the future. Okay, LRU approximates off by looking at the recent past and assuming that past is a good predictor of the future. Okay, so that's where we left it last time. So I'm going to talk about behavior of FIFO and LRU today. We will talk about implementation details. Okay, so we'll see that page replacement, although it sounds very simple, to implement it efficiently is not a trivial task. So we are going to pretty much spend a good half or two-thirds of the lecture talking about LRU implementations. Okay, how do you do that efficiently? We will see that you cannot implement pure LRU very efficiently, so we'll look at approximations, two of them as a matter of fact, two of LRU approximations, and then we'll talk about issues like thrashing and multi-programming and things like that. Okay, so let's start with LRU behavior. Okay, so we'll basically take a scenario, so with FIFO, number one. Okay, we'll assume that initially, this is not very nicely done. So these are two scenarios. Scenario 1 is where you have a RAM of size 3, and scenario 2 is where you have a RAM of size 4. Okay, so frame 1, frame 2, frame 3 is scenario 1. So this should have been actually two tables, and this is the second scenario. Okay, so you have a process that has a reference stream that looks like that. It has 5 pages, A, B, C, D, and E. That's the order in which that process accesses those pages over the course of its execution. Okay, so we are asking the question, how many page faults do you get when you have three frames, and then what happens when you add more memory? Okay, the intuition being as you allocate more memory to a process, it should behave better. Okay, because you have given it more RAM, so its number of page faults should reduce. Okay, so we are going to do an analysis or comparison rather of FIFO and LRU and see how they behave when we add more memory to a process. Okay, so let us look at this scenario. minutes. Okay, so the reference stream is A, B, C, E, A, B, E, A, B, C, D. Okay, so we start with three frames. Okay, so this is how the process is executing. So first it accesses frame A. This, you start with empty memory, so that's a page fault, and you bring A into memory. Okay, then you access B. It's another page fault. B is not yet in RAM, so you basically see this. Okay, and then same thing happens to C. Okay, then you access D. D is not in RAM, so that's also a page fault, and now memory is filled up with three pages. So you have to bring in page replacement. We are looking at FIFO, so you throw out the page that came in first, that's A. Okay, so A is going to go out, get evicted, and you are going to bring D in. Okay, and then you access A again. Okay, so you just threw out A, so that's going to be another page fault. Okay, so you'll bring A in, and now you're going to discard B, because of D, B, and C, B was brought in first. Okay, page fault, and you access B, another page fault. Okay, what goes out? C. Okay, so D. Okay, then you bring in E. Not bring in, you access E, that's yet another page fault. So of D, A, and B, brought in D first among these three, so it's going to look like E, A, B. Okay, so A is not a page fault, B is not a page fault, and then you access C, that's a page fault. Okay, so you look backwards and say FIFO, you brought in A first, so A goes out here. Okay, and then that's a page fault. And D, page fault yet again. Okay, so what do you throw out here? B goes out. Not the page fault. E is still in memory. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah. 9 page faults total. Is that clear? So we are going to repeat the same exercise with 4 frames. Okay. That's a page fault. That's a page fault. That's a page fault. Okay, now you have D. There's still one more frame, so it's going to be a page fault, but you bring B in. Okay, so now what's going to happen here? Okay, so this is okay, that's okay, and that's a page fault.
Evict A.
Okay, so you're going to evict A. Okay, and then you have another page fault here. You evict B. Okay. That's a page fault. You access B next, you just threw it out. E, A, B, D. Okay. That's going to be another page fault. Okay. That's a page fault. Now you're going to evict D. E. And that's a page fault as well. So what happened? How many faults is that? It's 10. So we add RAM and performance got worse.
The thing we're doing is 5 per keys.
Sorry?
The thing we're doing is 5 per keys, right?
So either we made a mistake, but as you will see, we did not. Okay, that's actually the behavior in this case. So what we are seeing is adding RAM sometimes doesn't actually help. It makes the performance get worse. Okay? Completely counterintuitive. You would never expect that you give a process more memory and it starts behaving worse in terms of its page fault rate. If it could store more pages, intuitively you expect that it will have fewer faults because it can keep more pages in memory and fewer on disk. Okay? So this behavior is referred to as Bellady's anomaly. Okay, named after Les Bellady, who first observed it in the 60s, I believe. Okay. Bellady's anomaly says that there are certain types of page replacement policies where adding memory can make the performance get worse. Okay, rather than make it get better. Ideally, you want monotonic improvement. The more RAM you give, it shouldn't get worse. It should stay the same or get better. Okay? So now we are going to repeat the same thing with LRU. Okay, it's going to be a little painful, but we'll do the same exercise all over again. The first three. Okay, so A, B, C is always page fault. We are going to do D, which is a page fault also. Okay, so you are going to access, look backwards and throw out the least recently used page. That's A. Okay, so you are going to get D, C, and then you have a page fault again. Okay, what goes out? B is going to be out, and then you access B. Yes, C is going to be out. Page fault, you access E, still a page fault. Yes, so you always look backwards and say that's the least recently accessed page, so it's going to look like E, A, B. Page fault, then you access A, still in memory. Access B, still in memory, so not a page fault. Then you come and access C. Okay, that's a page fault because you have EAB. So you look backward and say which is the least recently accessed page from EAB, that's E. Okay, so E goes out. So you have C, A, B. Okay, and look at this one. Okay, so you're going to throw C, D, B. That's also a page fault. From this point, you are going to throw out B. Okay, so that is how many? Ten. Okay, let's repeat this with four page frames and see what happens now. Okay, so A, B, C, D. So first four are page faults. Now memory is filled up. You are going to look at A, still here. Look at B, still here. Then you look at E. E is not in memory, so that is a page fault. So which one do you replace? Okay, you are going to have to look backwards here. Say B was accessed here, A, C, and D. That's the least recently accessed page. Okay, so you are going to say A, B, E, D. Okay? And then you access A again. You're good. B again, you are good. C is going to be a page fault. What are you going to replace here? Okay, because you look backwards, you say A, B is accessed here, A is accessed here, E is accessed here, D is accessed there. Okay, so you are going to throw out D. Okay, bad mistake because D is accessed right afterwards. So then you look backwards and say, what do you throw out now? You are going to throw out E. Okay, that's a page fault. Okay, but if you look at the total number of faults, we are down. Okay, down to 8. So So we went from 10 to 8. Okay. So this is not a proof, this is just an example, but there is a proof out there that says LRU doesn't have the behavior of FIFO. In LRU, when you add pages or give more pages to a process, its page fault rate either stays the same or decreases. Okay, it's never going to increase. Okay, in other words, LRU, you can prove, does not have Bernoulli's anomaly. Okay. Now, I won't actually prove it here, but I'm just going to give you an intuition. Okay. The proof or the insight is as follows. If by adding pages to a process, you have a page replacement policy that always keeps all the pages that it had previously but adds some more, okay, because now it has more memory, then you can argue that the page fault rate can never decrease because you always had all of the previous pages and now you have some more. Okay, see, put another way, if you look at any column here, okay, and you look at the pages here and pages here, okay, the pages when you had fewer frames is going to be a strict subset of the pages here. Okay, you will always, when you add more memory, you will always have the same number of pages you had before and some more. Okay, any LRU, any page replacement policy that has this property, you can prove does not have Bernoulli's anomaly. Okay, because all that is saying is, if I had three pages, let's say I had A, B, C, I add a fourth page, no matter what happens, I always have A, B, C, now I can have one more page. Okay, if I had one more page, I would never have more faults because I already have all the pages I had before and some more. So the number of faults can only reduce, never increase. Okay. If these two are randomly different, okay, if these pages and these pages don't correlate at all, then you can have arbitrary behavior. That's what happened in FIFO. Okay. So the basic intuition or the basic proof, which we will not prove formally, is that LRU exhibits a behavior such that whenever you add more memory, the memory contents of a process are a strict superset of what it had before. Okay. So you take any column here. Okay, you have E, A, B, you will see that as E, A, B here. Okay. You look at this one, you have C, A, B, you will have C, A, B and some more, in this case one more. Okay. So this is always a superset of that. So you can never have more page faults. Okay, because if there is a fault here, it can only be a fault or no fault because there is one more page, so the faulted page should be. You cannot have more fault. Okay, that's the intuition. Did that make any sense? Yes? Yeah. This one?
Yeah.
In this column? You accessed E. You have A, B, D, C. You don't have E.
Okay.
So that's going to be a page fault. I just didn't show you what happens. You'll have to look backwards and throw out A. Okay, so this is going to be E, B, D, C. Okay. So LRU is one among many policies that have this behavior where whenever you add pages, you will actually see a superset. If you go back to the table that we drew earlier, if you compare this column and this column, they may not always be a superset. You may have some arbitrary pages here and arbitrary pages there. Okay, so this is why you have that issue in case of LRU, in case of FIFO, but not in case of LRU. Okay, so this is something to keep in mind, that there is something called Bernoulli's anomaly, that Bernoulli's anomaly affects place replacement policies like FIFO, which makes it very unpredictable for the OS, saying, should I give it more pages? And you don't know whether that will help or hurt, because if by giving it more, you are actually hurting performance, you are better off not doing it. Okay, in LRU, you get what the intuition tells you. You give a process more RAM, its performance should only get better in terms of page faulting, because it can hold more pages. Okay. So that's Bernoulli's anomaly. Now let's talk about implementation. Okay, needless to say, of the three policies we talked about, FIFO, OPT and LRU, the only reasonable choice for us to implement is LRU. FIFO we already saw had bad properties sometimes. Nevertheless, we'll see there are OSs that do use them. But OPT we said we cannot implement. It requires knowledge of the future. Okay, so LRU is the only choice. Okay, so we are going to look at how to implement LRU. Okay, and we'll see that it's not as simple as it looks. Okay, so let's look at LRU in its perfect form. Okay, so at any point you keep track of which pages were accessed when, and whenever there is a page fault, you evict the least recently used page. Okay. Simplest way to do this is whenever you access a page, timestamp that page. You simply put a timestamp saying this is when it was accessed last. Whenever there is a page fault, you look at all the timestamps and you throw out the one with the oldest timestamp. That is by definition the least recently accessed page. The least recently accessed page says all the ones that you are looking at, which one was accessed the farthest in the past. Okay, by timestamping a page, whenever you access a page, whenever you refer, any instruction refers to a page, you update the timestamp. That's the time of last access. Okay, so among all the pages, you find the one that has the least time of last previous access. That is the least recently accessed page. Okay, this is one way to implement LRU. Okay, nevertheless, I mean, it's not a good way to implement LRU. Okay, because timestamping a page on every memory reference is going to be expensive. Why is it expensive?
You have to traverse the list every time you want to timestamp something, and you have to traverse the list every time you want to check
them. Okay, so we can assume there is a page table. So you access a page, there is a page table that points you to the page. Okay, so at this point we are not as worried about traversing a list. Okay, if you don't keep a list in sorted order when you evict it, you may have to do a linear scan. That is bad, but let's ignore that for the moment. Okay? I'm just saying, why is timestamping expensive? Forget eviction. Okay, so that's the question. Yes.
It really depends on where the timestamps are stored, I guess.
Okay. It depends on where timestamps are stored. You had something to add?
I was going
to
say, it's just the CPU, well, I'm not really sure, but something's going to have to do the operation of making the timestamp piece.
Right. So, what does timestamp mean? You are going to read the clock, that's going to tell you the current time, and you are going to write that value to the page somewhere. Okay. Now, let's say you put that in, as you add an entry to the page table and you put it there. Okay. For every page table entry, you also now have a timestamp field. Okay. And that timestamp has to be updated on every memory access. What does that tell you? Yes.
Well, the page table is probably in kernel memory. So if we have to update the timestamp on every memory access, there's going to be some amount of time to get the timestamp. It's going to take some work. And then we're going to essentially double the time it takes for memory access, because we have to make a memory access to write to kernel memory before we can make the memory access to actually get the data we wanted.
Right.
So it's going to have the speed of your memory accesses.
Right. So that's exactly right. If you actually timestamp every page on its access, you are slowing down performance by half. Okay, you're going to get a machine that's half as slow, because every memory access requires an additional memory access to store that timestamp. The timestamp is stored in the page table, then you have to access the page table. The page table is in kernel memory. Okay, so then you have to go and write there. Okay? So each memory access, the effective memory access thing we were looking at last time, it's going to tell us that if you have to actually access the page table to access a page, and page tables are in memory, your performance is actually going to go down dramatically. Okay? Not a good idea. And this doesn't even include the time to actually read the wall clock time from the clock on your machine and all of that. Just memory accesses are slowed down significantly. Okay, so you definitely don't want to go and implement this scheme. Okay? And then the other problem is, just because you put a timestamp doesn't tell you which page to evict. Suppose that there is page fault, you have to linearly scan all the pages and find the one with the least timestamp. Okay, if it's a large process, you may have to potentially scan a page table with tens or thousands of entries. Okay, because the page table is not in sorted order, it's not sorted by timestamps. Okay, it's just a table that is indexed by page numbers. Okay, so you may have arbitrary timestamps in there. So you are going to, eviction is going to be expensive, and page table updates are going to be horrendously slow in terms of memory, effective memory access. Okay, so this we don't like in terms of implementation efficiency. The next technique is, let's not worry about timestamps. Okay? Let's just keep a linked list that's sorted in order of accesses. pages that are accessed recently will be at the front of the list. Pages that have been accessed in long time ago are going to be at the back of the list. So this is a list that is sorted in access order. Okay? So every time you access a page, you are going to move it to the front of this list. Okay, so the most recently accessed page is at the front. The least recently accessed page is at the end of this list. Okay? Evictions are constant time, order of one operation. You just look at the end of the list and you throw out the page. Okay? Because the page is already sorted. The one that's most recently used at the beginning, the least recently used page is at the end. Okay? So evictions are very efficient. Okay? The problem with this approach is updating the list. Okay? Whenever you access a page in memory, you have to move that page in this list, you have to move that page entry to the beginning. Okay? If you have actually done this in C, you will know that modifying a doubly linked list requires you to modify up to 6 pointers.
Yes. Why didn't
it be doubly linked? It has to be doubly linked. It could be singly linked, it doesn't matter. Okay, it's doubly linked because you can traverse it in either order. Right, so think about this. Let me give you a simple example why it shouldn't. So let's say it's singly linked. Okay. That's the head. Okay. This is the tail. Okay, suppose there is a page fault. Okay, what are you going to evict? Okay, you're going to evict the tail. Where do you point the tail? You have to point it here. But how do you know what that element is? You have to start at the beginning and scan it and get this mode. If it was doubly linked, then you basically, the way you update the tail is you say what is the previous element you pointed there, and then you just discard it. Okay, so doubly link makes these operations easier. Okay, but you could do singly link, it doesn't matter. The issue is updating a linked list is expensive, because what do you have to do? If you want to actually, if this page is accessed, you have to move it to the front, which means this will have to point there. You'll have to take this, move it here, update this, you have to update the head. Okay? Each of those operations is a memory update. Okay? This is a list that is stored in memory. Okay? So now your factor of 6 slowed down by trying to do something smart. Okay? That was only factor of 2. Now you have made the performance even worse. Okay? Evictions are now very efficient, order one time. Okay? So there you had a very poor eviction rate. Okay, this is constant time eviction. You just look at the tail and you're done. But updates, which is probably the more common case, because page faults are rare and memory accesses are the common case, are very slow. Yes.
Is there any way we could store this in a form of caches or something?
Is there any way to store it? You can't store a linked list in a cache. Okay. In the previous case, you should have asked, why can't you not do that in the TLB? You could, but eventually you have to write it back. Okay, so it's not going to significantly change anything. The timestamps eventually have to propagate back to the page table, okay, even if you just updated them. So it doesn't save you that much. Okay. So now you can't typically store a linked list in hardware. Okay, there is no hardware data structure that allows you to do this. Okay, so as you can see, if you say, okay, LRU is good, it has all these nice properties in terms of page replacement, let's go implement it, and you start implementing it in the kernel, you are going to get very bad performance. Okay, because these two are the obvious things you could do, timestamp or keep a sorted list. Okay, both of those are expensive. Okay, so most of the actual operating systems kernels only use approximation. Okay, try to reduce the implementation efficiency of LRU, because pure LRU is just too expensive to implement. Okay, typically not done. Okay, so what are the things you can do? You can use what are called reference bits, which don't take real clock time but approximate clock time in a fewer number of bits. Okay, so think of instead of a full clock, you are given a 2-bit clock. Okay, so the clock value can go 0001 1011. just as an example. So what that means is now you're taking time and you're approximating time. So you can take all the time in the past, since the process started, to now and basically partition it into four chunks. Okay? And any, so this is basically, these are the four clock values you can get. So this is a very old page. This is the newest, this is the page that's in the newest group. So you basically now partition the pages into sets and say any page that belongs to this group is in the old set. This is the newest set and these two are sort of in the middle.
Do processes themselves keep track of that, or the operating system is right?
The OS has to do all of this. Processes are not going to tell you anything. And so process is just executing. The OS is going to keep some notion of time. And here we are using a 2-bit clock. You can have an 8-bit clock. The reason we are using these bits is bit flipping can be implemented in hardware. Okay, the full clock time is actually an assembly instruction to read the clock time and then go update something in memory. But this you could potentially update in hardware in the TLB and things like that. Yes?
That's kind of what I was going to ask. So the updating the reference bits every time you do a memory access, is that done in hardware? Because you wouldn't want the operating system to have to run every time you have a memory access, right?
Yes. I mean, so typically you want to do this in hardware. The OS is not going to do anything for you. So whenever you access a page table entry, you need to be able to flip a bit and things like that. Okay, so the way this is going to work is as follows. Okay, let's assume you have a 2-bit clock, just as an example. Okay. So you start out, let's say, each page starts out with, or maybe let's make it 3 bits, just to make it a little more interesting. So all entries start out with 0. Okay. Whenever you access a page, you just flip its least significant bit. Okay? And you do this for some interval, let's say 1-minute interval. I'm just making up a number, it could be any interval. So all the pages that were accessed in the past 1 minute, you are going to flip a bit. Okay? And there are some pages you would have accessed and others you didn't. Okay? At the end of that 1-minute interval, you are going to shift everything one step to the left. Yeah, so basically, this will become 1 and zeros will get shifted in. Okay, so a new interval starts. Okay, you repeat the same process. Okay, so every time you access a page, you flip its bit. Okay, and if your bit is already set, there's nothing to do. Okay, and then after that 1 minute, you again flip that. Okay, so what this is doing is, for each interval of some duration t, it basically says, did I access that page in that interval? Yes.
Sorry. When you drew it, you showed putting the 1 in the low order bit and shifting left. When you wrote the words, it says you put the 1 in the higher order bit and shift right.
Right. So, depends on whether you're doing big Indian architecture or little Indian. I don't know, probably you heard of big Indian, little Indian. Okay, basically it says which is the, whether you, the most significant bit is to the left or to the right. Okay, so I just showed an example that's opposite of that. It doesn't matter. Here, if you're doing right shift, it basically says that the rightmost bit is least significant. If you're doing this, it says the leftmost bit is least significant. Here, this is the rightmost bit. It doesn't matter. Okay, so if you're going to actually read 010 as an integer going that way, you do it this way. You're going to have a big Indian architecture, you read the integer that way.
Okay, but if you're going to kick out the lowest numbered page, then wouldn't you want to put the 1 in the ones in the high order bit, not the low order bit? And then shift them towards low order over time.
Yes, you're right. So in that case, so if you had 100, this would be the most, 110, reading that, or this would be the newest page. This would be the next newest, and this would be the, sorry, that would be the next, and this would be the least.
And that's in big Indian?
Yes. Okay, so if we do it the way we actually read, which is left to right, you would do it that way. Okay, which is, you basically, you flip this bit and you will move it that way. Okay, then you basically read left to right. This is the way we normally read things. Okay, so it's just architectural detail that you have to worry about how to decide what the value of this bit string means. Okay. So let me just repeat what I just said. What you are going to do, okay, you have some number of bits, let's say n. Okay, you have some number of bits n. Okay, so you start out a page with all zeros. Okay, and you take an interval of any duration, 1 minute, half a 1 second, whatever interval you want, and you will basically keep track of whenever you access a page, you are going to flip a bit, okay, just to keep it consistent with the slide. I'm just going to flip it rather than cause more confusion. So we will basically flip this bit, okay, and then at the end of the interval, you are going to shift everything. Okay, so that one goes out, and then a new zero comes in. Okay, and then if you want to evict a page, you're just going to treat this as an integer. In this case, you have to read the bit string that way, so it's 0100. Okay, so that's going to be 8 as an integer value. Okay, and this one, so if you have something that is 1000, this would have been accessed more recently. Okay, so it has a value 16. Okay, so this is lower than this, so you will evict that. As an example. Okay. So these are very simple bit operations that approximate what a clock is. Okay. Typically, if you take a real timestamp, you are going to get a much bigger bit string, and that's the actual time. This is just approximating time by saying, did you access it in some interval? Okay. All the pages that are accessed in that interval get the same timestamp. Think of this as a timestamp. Okay. You can't distinguish between those pages anymore. Because all of the times, if you had actual clock value, you could distinguish in a more fine grain. Here, your core made the timestamp more coarse grain. Okay, so this is how we are going to do it. Okay, so this is a simpler implementation. It's a hardware implementation. It still requires you to have some additional hardware to manipulate either page tables or TLBs. You still don't want to do this in memory, right? So this is going to be done in hardware. So you need TLBs that support this kind of operation. Yes,
question. Can you get away with using locality to simulate a clock? Like if you were to write in a certain direction of memory and just get rid of older entries that way? It's like if you always proceeded around, it doesn't happen that way. Like if you were to proceed around a...
So if you actually could store the pages in RAM in some order, then you knew the access order, that's a different thing. But we said pages go anywhere in RAM. Right, so we are not controlling where the pages go. So the order of storing pages has nothing to do with order of access. Okay, so the good thing about this is it is somewhat more efficient than looking at actual clock value. Still, you have to do a linear scan. Okay, once you have a page fault, but it's not that bad. You start and say if there is look at the least significant, but you are just going to scan this way and find the one that has the least value. Okay, so if it's all zeros after some value, then it's done. Okay, so this is one way to approximate. Here is another way to approximate it, which takes this idea and makes it even more coarse grain. Here we had an n-bit clock, n-bit timestamp, not a clock, n-bit timestamp. Let's see what we can do if you just had a 1-bit timestamp. Okay, the entire timestamp is just 1 bit. Okay, the value on a page can be either 0 or 1. Okay, so also if it's, so what we are going to do is if it's 0, that's an old page. If it's 1, that's a new page. Okay, so basically if you want to edit something, you pick an old page. It doesn't matter which one. Yeah, there may be many of them. We can't distinguish with a 1-bit clock. They are all the same from our perspective. You can edit either or any of those. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll still keep the pages in a list. Okay, we'll keep a bit. Okay, typically the bit you can even stick on the TLB if you want. Okay, and then whenever there is a page fault, you are going to cycle through the list and you are going to look at the bits. Okay? And if you encounter a page with bit 1, you are going to actually set it to 0. Okay? Because you are scanning and resetting the bits. And the moment you find a page with bit 0, that's already 0, you have it. Okay, yes, question.
So, what do we lose in accuracy does that make? Is that made up for what we gain in time compared to the other algorithms?
Right. So what do you lose and what do you gain? So clearly, if you have a 3-bit clock or two, let's just take 2-bit clock, right? So here you could basically distinguish between four groups of pages, okay? Four pages that were accessed in four different intervals. Here, time is only two intervals, new and old. You can't distinguish between new, which is newer, you can't tell, okay? Here, you can basically, if you had this, you can have two groups. So this is very old, this is old, okay, this is new, and this is very new. Okay, four groups. So you can do a little better eviction by picking something in this group or this group. Okay. If you just throw out that bit, this bit goes out, and these two groups merge. Okay, now you cannot distinguish between those two. So you are basically, you might end up picking a page here over there. Okay, so that's what you are going to lose. What you gain, we will look at. Okay, this is just one bit. It's simple to efficient. You can implement that in hardware. Flipping bits is even easier than doing bits and right or left shifts. Okay, that's basically the point. Yeah, but let's understand what the algorithm is one more time. Okay, you have a circular list of pages. Okay, each page has a bit on it. Okay, we haven't said where the bit is stored. For now, just assume there's a bit associated with the page. Every time you access a page, you set the bit. Okay, whenever there is a page fault, you scan through the list. Okay, and if you encounter a page with bit 1, you are going to reset the bit. Okay, new interval starts. Okay, and then the first page you find with a bit 0, you have it, because that's an old page, and once you find old page, you are done. Okay, so some pages will get their bits reset, and other pages are basically going to some page is going to be evicted. Yeah, this algorithm is referred to as clock in the literature, also as second chance. Okay, the reason it's second chance is any page that you have encountered with a bit of 1 is given one more chance to be not evicted. Okay, you could have evicted that if it was a random policy. Here you say, I'm going to keep this page in memory. Next time I scan, if it's 0 still, then I evict it. But if it's reset to 1, then it gets yet another chance. Okay, so the question that was asked is here, less accurate than using additional bits. Fast, since setting a single bit is very fast. And page faulting is faster because you only have to search it until you get the first 0 bit. Okay, and then you are done. You don't have to scan through the whole list to find one with the least timestamp. Yes.
So if you're changing let's say you had a couple that had 1 and they get switched to 0, I mean, like, how many accesses can you actually have in one frame? Because otherwise, everything is just 0 all the time.
How many accesses do you have to have for a frame?
How many can you have for a frame?
So now time is basically divided into page fault intervals, right? So you have page fault interval. So between these intervals, there will be many, many, many accesses. In fact, last time when we did the analysis, we said if you even want a 10% slowdown, you can afford to have one page fault for 1,000,000 instructions. Okay, so assume that if each instruction did have a memory reference, then 1,000,000 memory references before you have page fault. Okay, so you have, now that doesn't mean you access 1,000,000 pages. Most of those references will go to a small number of pages. But you can now track very clear, easily, which pages are being accessed and which pages are not. If for the past 1,000,000 instruction, there's a page that was never accessed and it still has a bit 0, it's a good indicator it's okay to throw it out. Right?
When does the frame change?
When's
the frame updated?
The bit. So every time there's a page fault, so that's what I was going to draw here. Okay, so let's say we have this list. Okay, so you have 1,100, and this is the head. So this is, okay, every time there's a page fault, you start scanning. Let's say you just scan anti-clockwise here. So you say, should I evict this page? It has a bit of 1. You say, I'm not going to evict it. I give it a second chance. I reset this bit, and I advance the head here. Do I evict this page? It has a bit of 1. It's a new page. I'm going to give it a second chance. So I reset the bit, move to the next one. Say, should I evict this page? It has a bit of 0, so this page goes out. Okay. So you are going to scan through the list and start resetting any bits, and as soon as you encounter a page with bit not set, you evict that page. Okay.
And until there's another page fault, there's a whole bunch of accesses in between all the bits.
Right. All the way until the next page fault, there are going to be lots of accesses. These bits are going to get set again. Then you start scanning from this point. Okay, so that's what you would.
Okay,
yes.
Okay,
so the starting pointer changes as well. Yes, so you keep it at where you evicted and you start scanning from that. There's no point scanning from here because you already examined this, right? So you want to go back and throw out even older pages. Yes.
So before we critique the problems based on being able to change their forward and backward reference pointers, don't we need a reverse reference pointer? So essentially, it's make 4 pointer changes. Like, it's still pretty heavy to evict
So here you don't actually need pointers. Okay, what you will just simply do, okay, let's say it's a page table, not a TLV. You can do this in TLV. You are just going to scan the page table. Okay, you have these bits. because the order doesn't matter anymore, right? Because this is some random order. You're not sort. It's not a sorted order. So the page, the pointers never need to be manipulated. So you just scan down the page table. Since you scan and say, what is the first page? So you start resetting bits, and then the first time you find one with zero, you evict it. Okay, so the previous ones actually had sorted. This is not sorted. This is just a list. So they degenerate to just scanning the page table or the TLB.
So evicting is essentially just writing in the new data.
Yes, evicting just says I just start scanning, resetting, and as soon as I find with something with zero, I throw that out, bring a new page in there.
And you keep a pointer to that point, right?
Yes, so you just have to keep one variable saying this is where I scan. So next time I start scanning downwards. Right, so your circular list is the page table in this case. You're just going to scan the page table in order. Yeah, so that is efficient. You don't need to worry about pointers or anything. So this is just a logical representation of what's happening. This is what's happening physically. Okay, so we already did this. Though that's the same thing shown in some complicated example. So here, the only thing to keep in mind is now you have a 1-bit timestamp. So essentially, you have two categories, young and old pages. Okay, and then you first time you find an old page, you just throw it out. Okay, so now we'll ask the question, can we do somewhat better? Okay, and now we'll say now instead of 1 bits, we are going to store 2. Okay, so what would we do in that? Okay, so keep in mind that although we are now classifying pages as young or old, we don't yet know whether the page is dirty or not. Okay, 2 classes ago we said the best page to evict is the page that is not dirty and can be thrown out without being written back. So you might find an old page, but that page is actually dirty, which means it has been modified. So you have to first write it to disk before you can override the memory content. Ideally, you want to find an old page that is not dirty, is clean. Okay, so you can simply throw that page out because there's a copy on disk. There's no need to write it back. Okay? So here you may make a bad choice by picking an old page, and then now you have 2 disk accesses. Because you have to first write that page, then bring in the new page. So a page fault service time has doubled. Instead of taking 25 milliseconds, you will take 50 milliseconds. That's even worse for the process. Okay? So ideally, you want to throw out clean pages, if you can find one. So it has to be old and clean. That's the one we like the best. Okay? And so basically, now we will add 1 bit to track whether the page has been modified or not. And then we'll have another bit to track when it was accessed. Okay, so we'll have, so this bit is called a reference bit. The reference bit is when it was referred. 0 means it was referred way in the past, 1 means it was referred recently. So we add a second bit called the modify bit. Modify bit simply says has the page been written or not, and if the page, any time you update a page, you set that modify bit. That says this page has to be written back to disk before you evict it. Okay, if you just simply overwrite it, the changes are lost. So disk has to have a copy of whatever is in memory. Yes, question.
So would you also have like an other bit to store whether it's already written in memory or not?
This is that bit which is written in memory. Modify just is have you written to it in memory.
So that's the difference between clean and unclean. Right?
Yes.
There was another thing you said just now, whether we have to write it back to memory, right?
If the bit is, if it's a dirty page, you have to write it to disk. That's the definition of how you handle dirty pages, right? So the page has been modified. If you are going to throw it away, right? So that page has to go back to disk. So you have to write it out before you can overwrite it. Okay, so that always is true for dirty pages. Clean pages say that whatever is in memory is there's an identical copy on disk already. So I don't need to do anything. I can simply overwrite it. Okay, so you can just read the new page and overwrite the content. Okay? So now there are 4 kinds of pages you will find in your list. So there are 2 bits. 00 okay, says the page was neither recently used nor has it been modified. Okay? This is the page we like the best. Okay? It's old and clean. Clean means overwrite, old means not in use recently. Okay? Throw it out, nothing to write back to disk. Okay? Next one is 01. This says it has not been recently used, okay, but it has been modified. This is old but dirty. Okay? If you want to evict this page, then you have to write it out. So we don't still want to do this because it's going to double your page fault rate. Okay, but somehow you want to start some background task to write it out so next time it becomes looks clean. Okay. 10 says that it is recently used but not modified. Okay, so if since it's been recently used, you might need it again, so you still don't want to throw it out. And 1-1 is sort of the case where it's both in use and it has been written. Okay, this is the least desirable page to evict. Yes.
Do we weight the 1 versus 3 in this particular example? So, like, both 1 and 3 can be evicted quickly.
Yes.
Is there a weight that makes finding a 2 or 1 first better?
So we are going to simply do the same thing. We are going to scan. We don't keep anything in sorted order because that says pointers and pointers are expensive. So we can only scan. And the first time you find a 0, 0, that's the best one. Okay? But if you encounter one of these other ones, you have to do something about them. Either you reset a bit or start writing it out, or we'll look at the algorithm. Okay? So this is an enhanced clock algorithm, okay, which is a clock but with some additional feature. So here you might have to cycle the page table up to 3 times to find a page with 0, 0, and we'll see why you need to cycle through 3 times. Okay? Because the worst case is where everything is 1, 1, and we'll see what happens. Okay? So you will basically just simply start scanning your list or the page table. If you find a page with 0, 0, you are done. Okay? Old and clean. Okay? Good to go out. Okay? If you find a page with 0, 1, okay? Old page but dirty. Okay? So we say, okay, it's old but it's dirty, so I don't want to evict it now, but I'm going to asynchronously trigger a write, disk write, saying let me start a write so that in the background I write the contents out, and as soon as the contents are written out, then that bit can be flipped, because if the memory copy is identical to the disk copy, it's clean. Okay? So I'll just start some background writes. Okay? But I won't do anything, I'll just proceed. So I'll just trigger a IO and I'll just continue. Okay. And then I keep, so if I see 1, 0, I'll flip that bit like before. Okay. And if I see 1, 1, I flip the bit and I trigger a write. Okay. So these are the 4 cases. Okay. If I see 0, 0, you are done, which means evict. Okay. I see 0, 1, okay, background write. Okay. I see 1, 0, I just flip that bit, so this becomes 0, 0 in this round. Okay, so but I don't evict it yet, I just give it a second chance like before. Okay, and I get 1, 1, this becomes 0, 1, but I still give it a second chance. Okay, so if there are no 0, 0 pages at all, okay, you'll scan through the entire page table, you'll start writing some out, you'll reset some, okay, but not evict them yet, and then you will basically reset some and make them 0, 1. Okay, so you may potentially scan through the entire page table and find no page with 0, 0. Okay, then we go and cycle through again. Okay, so now when I cycle through, if some of these IOs that are triggered have finished, this page will flip to 0, 1. Okay, then I'm good, because I just found a page, because those IOs that you triggered would have finished. If they are not finished, you keep moving through. Okay, and then some that have now, some that were 1, 0, which became 0, 0, now become candidates, because there is no better page. Okay, so basically, that's what you are asking. You will basically try that. If you don't find that these bits have been flipped, so next time around they become 0, 0, so you prefer that. Okay, and if you find neither of those two, you have to wait for some IO to finish before you find a page in category 2. Okay, so potentially you may go through the entire page table again and not find any page, because if everything was 1, 1, you are not going to find it. Everything becomes 0, 1, and the next iteration you trigger a bunch of writes, and then in the third iteration you find one that has finished IO, and you might find. Okay, so you might have to scan the entire page table 3 times in the worst case, okay, before you find a page with 0, 0. That's the worst case. On the average case, there will be something with 0, 0. So you will basically scan a few entries and you will find it. Yeah, but the worst case is you may actually potentially do 3 cycles through all the pages to find them. But you are guaranteed to find it on the third pass. Okay, yes.
So, when it writes the page out, does that stop the scan while we wait for the page being written out, or do we just keep scanning while it writes out the background?
Yeah. You scan, you say 1, 0, 1, start writing, continue scanning. You just say start writing, you just queue them up for IO. But you continue scanning, you don't wait at all.
So, do I really be done by the time you do your passing?
Yeah.
Typically, if you scanning memory is going to be faster than IO. Okay, so, you come back, the IO may not have finished. Okay, so, you'll have to wait. Okay, because it takes up to 10 to 20 milliseconds for an IO to finish. It may not take 10 milliseconds, unless this is a very large process with maybe 50,000 entries in the page table that you are scanning, then it may take a little while to scan 50,000 entries. But typically you may not need that much time. It may take a few milliseconds. So second pass and third pass are rare cases. Yeah, typically you will always find some page in the first pass and you would have triggered some IO, try to write dirty pages, reconvert them to clean pages, and some bits are flipped, so on the next time around the old new pages become old pages. Okay, yes.
I have one question. So like if you find one too thick, it's great, but I mean wouldn't you want to go through the whole thing anyway just to make the dirty clean?
Would you not want to go through the whole thing anyway to make dirty clean? Typically, whenever you have a page fault, it triggers some IOs. Okay? And you don't want to continue scanning because this is a big page table. Okay? So what happens is there is a background process that the OS runs. Every once in a while, it goes and starts writing some dirty pages, okay, just to make things consistent. Okay? So you have this periodic background process that is going to go run and write out some dirty pages. So either you write them out at page fault time or you try to write them out else through this background process, because dirty pages have to become clean. They have to get written out. Okay? You don't want to necessarily wait until a page fault to do that. Okay. So that's the example which I'm not going to go through again. I already did that here. So that's the enhanced second chance implementation. Okay, so things to keep in mind, still two bits. So you can implement it efficiently. You can put those under TLB and the page tables and just manipulate bits and you will basically be okay most of the time. Okay, so it's still not very cheap but reasonable to do. Okay, now we'll talk about some other issues which have to do with how to allocate memory to a process. Okay, means how much memory to allocate to a process. We already looked at these cases where in FIFO when you went from 3 page frames to 4, performance got worse. Typically you don't only allocate 3 or 4 pages, you allocate more, but how do you decide how much to allocate? Okay. So you could say whenever a process starts up, I give it 100 pages. I just pick the number 100 from a hat and say here 100 pages. Okay. Is that the right number? Should it increase, decrease? How does the OS figure out? The process is not going to tell the OS I need 127 pages now. 5 minutes from now it goes up to 135. It doesn't tell you anything. Okay. The OS has to guess what is the right number of pages to allocate to a process. Okay. And if you allocate less than the quote unquote right number of pages, you are going to see this behavior called thrashing, which I'll come to in just a second. And if you give it more than that, you'll get good performance, but you have overcommitted your memory. You're given the process more memory than it needs for good performance. Okay? So how do you get this just right? That's really the question. Okay? So we have not yet asked that question. If you just said if you do page replacement and all of that, what happens? But we didn't say how do you decide that this process gets this much and so much. So as you'll see, in reality, processes do get different amounts of RAM. If you go back to that picture I had shown you last time. So you will see, if you actually look at the real memory allocated to a process, they're all different. Okay. How did the OS figure out that this is the right amount? Process didn't tell it that. It has somehow got converged to this value. Okay. Yes.
So, I mean, initially the OS knows how big the process is on disk, so it knows how much RAM it needs to copy all of the code segment and whatever into RAM. And then
keep going.
Process itself, when it does memory allocation, instructions, right?
Yep.
And you can use that to, if there's no more memory inside, if there's no more memory already associated with that process, then you need to give it more pages.
Right. So point being made is look at the size of the executable, which is the size of the code segment, whenever the process mallocs do something. Okay? But even last time we said you don't even want to keep the entire code segment in memory. Processes exhibit the 90-10 rule. It's a 90% of the time we are accessing 10% of their pages. This includes code and data. Okay? Now is it 8.5% or 10% or 12%, we don't know, but that's sort of the point. So how do you decide that? Right? How do you want to figure that out automatically? And we'll see what are some ways to do that. Right, so first we'll look at this concept called thrashing. Okay, thrashing basically says that memory is overcommitted, so pages are being continuously tossed out while they are in use. Okay, memory is under stress. You do not have enough memory for this process or in aggregate for all the processes in the system. The process is faulting far too frequently. Okay, so thrashing is a scenario where the process faults way too often. So you basically execute some instruction, you have a page fault, then you start doing I/O. You execute and page is brought in, execute some more instruction, there's another page fault, you go back to doing that. So if you don't give the process enough frames, it is going to fault very frequently. Okay? So this curve here basically shows you what happens as you start more and more, just one thing, you start more and more processes in the system. This is the degree of multi-programming. Right? So as you start more processes, the utilization initially goes up because you can do better interleaving of I/O and computation, but beyond a point there is memory stress in the system. You do not have enough RAM to accommodate all the processes. Okay? And at that point your performance is going to tank because every process starts faulting way too frequently. So most of the processes are essentially doing I/O. You converted all processes to being I/O bound because they are just doing I/O on their pages, trying to fetch them in. Not real I/O, they're just swapping on their pages. Okay, so the per CPU utilization is going to drop, everything is going to slow down, and you will say, why is my computer slow today? Okay.
Yeah, so yes. Is it because one process is getting way too much memory and another process is not getting enough memory, or is it because you just have way too many processes?
Yeah. So thrashing can happen because the question is, when does thrashing happen, right? So thrashing can happen for a number of reasons. You start way too many processes, okay, as compared to the RAM you have. That will cause thrashing. Okay. Thrashing can also happen on a per process basis. If the OS makes a mistake and gives a process way too less memory than it needs, it is going to thrash. Okay. Other processes may be okay, but this process is going to thrash and it's going to see lot of page fault. Okay. So that is just localized thrashing versus global thrashing. So you may get both kinds of behavior. So the question is, what do you do about this? So the points that we are trying to see was, how do you decide how to allocate processes? Right? So what you said is basically the first scheme, which is proportional allocation. Okay? You look at the size of the code segment. Okay? That doesn't tell you anything about the stack and the heap, incidentally. Okay? But as a simple case, you look at the size of the code segment and you say, I am going to allocate memory proportionately. Okay? If the size of, let's say SI denotes the size of the code segment for process I, this is how much memory I'm going to allocate for each process. Okay. So I find the fraction. So I take the size of all the processes, code segment, find mine. That's the fraction of memory I get. This is the total size of RAM. Okay. Proportionate allocation. Okay. Doesn't necessarily do the right thing, but it's a larger processes get more memory. Yes.
But that's only larger processes in terms of the amount of code they have, right? So there's no reason why a process that has a very small code segment couldn't immediately start reading in a whole bunch of really large files or something and
yes.
End up using way more memory than
So this is just saying, I'm going to, when I load the process, I just look at the size of its executable, I do this. Okay? Another thing I could do, which is the point that was just being made here, is I look at the address size of that process. Okay? When the process starts up, I know its virtual address size. Okay? And I do this for one virtual address size. This is the address space, not the size of the code segment. Okay? So if you basically look at, go back to that activity monitor here, okay? This is the virtual size of each process. Okay, so you see that this has 74 and this is 191. So you basically take this, sum it up, and then you take one of these processes. This is 77 over the sum of that. Okay, and so that's the allocation I get. Okay, so this is the size of the stack, heap, and the code segment for that process. Okay, and if that grows, I'm going to get more memory. If it shrinks, I get less memory over time. That's a little more intelligent way of doing proportionate allocation. Okay. Okay, so that's one way. Now, that doesn't necessarily tell you that just because a process is large doesn't mean it needs more memory. in the intuitively you think that it might, but as was pointed out, you may go and you may allocate a gigantic array and malloc a whole bunch of things, and then I don't access them at all. Okay, and I just get more memory because I just happen to malloc more than some other process. Right? So what you really want is to figure out how much the process is actually using, not how much it has actually been given as far as virtual address size is concerned. Okay, and we'll come back to that. So here's another policy, it says global replacement. Here it says why bother trying to partition the memory across processes. Put all pages on a global list, global LRU list. Okay? Let the processes fight it out. Okay? If you did not access some of your pages for a long time, your pages are going to be at the end of this global LRU queue, they are going to get evicted and some other process gets your page frames. And that may be fair. If you haven't accessed and some other process needs more memory, it's going to give it. If you start accessing more pages, then some other process is going to suffer. Okay, so processes are now competing for memory. And by and large, if processes are well behaved, you will reach an equilibrium where most processes get what they want. Okay, you may start with something small as you allocate more. Some other process shrinks and you get a little more and you basically might reach an equilibrium where every process is happy. Okay. That's not necessarily guaranteed, okay, but in most well-behaved systems, you may actually get it. Okay. So, the advantage here is it is flexible. You don't have to make any guesses, saying how much should I allocate. You just say, I'm just going to have this process compete with every other process. If it falls, some other process's page is going to get evicted. And that's the way it is. Okay. And as the process grows or shrinks, your allocation also grows or shrinks in terms of how you're using. Okay. Disadvantages, one process can now immediately impact the performance of other processes. In particular, you can write badly behaved program that go and actually start causing other processes pages to get evicted. Okay. I just go and just start just scanning my array every once in a while, so all my pages look young and every other processes page gets evicted. So I can have degenerate cases where I may cause other processes to thrash. In per process LRU, I only throw out my own pages. Okay, so the only process that I can impact is me, because I just made a bad decision and threw out a page. Here, I can cause some other processes page to get evicted and impact that other process. Okay, that doesn't give you isolation. Okay, you want transparency and isolation. Okay, but it simplifies the problem. It says, I don't care in terms of how to allocate. I'm just going to let the process compete. If you don't want to do that, you are back to per process replacement, where you have to guess how many page frames to allocate to a process and then do LRU within that process's pool. Okay, you are not going to evict somebody else's pool. But over time, I can grow and shrink the number of page frames based on what this process's needs are. Okay, the question is, how do you figure out what the process's needs are? Okay, and then we will use this notion of a working set size to figure that out. Okay, so let's define this term working set. Yeah, people have heard of this, I take it. Okay, so just to recap, working set is essentially the set of pages that the process is currently working on. It is what it suggests it to be. Okay, so that's a working set. So these are the pages that the process is currently accessing. But you always define the working set over some period T. Okay, how do you decide what is it working on? I mean, is it past 1 millisecond, 10 millisecond? You define the interval, T. Okay, you say, what are the pages this process accessed in that interval, T? And you say, that is the working set. Okay, here's a picture here. Okay, so those A, B, C, D references are now numbers. Those are page IDs. And so at this time, you say, what is the working set? Okay, our T is now this unit delta, that is this time interval. So look at that time interval and say, what are all the unique pages I accessed then? So there are pages 1, 2, 5, 6, 7. So that's the working set. Okay. At some other point in time, you may get a different working set. So if you say, what's the working set at time T2? Look at the same interval. It may be 1 minute. So what are the pages I accessed? There are only pages 3 and 4. So here the working set has changed. Okay. So working set will change over time as the process behavior changes. Okay. But at that point in time, those are the needs of the, if you don't give it 2 pages here and you don't give it 5 pages there, this process is going to thrash because it doesn't have enough page frames to hold its working set in memory. Okay. So the idea is somehow you have to estimate the working set and give that process at least that many frames. Okay? If you get fewer than the working set, you are thrashing. Okay? So overcommitted memory typically means you have too many processes and you cannot even store the working set of that process in memory, so it thrashes. Okay? Because those are the pages you access very frequently. You can't even store those pages, your performance will tank. Yes.
Kind of seems like the working set doesn't always follow the 90-10 rule.
Yes.
In the last example, it was like 5 pages.
Yep. So typically the 90-10 rule says that given all the pages in memory, typically the working set is going to be 10% or some small number. Okay, it could be smaller than that, but that's like an average rule of thumb. Okay. So question is, how do you pick this value T? Okay, you want to basically pick it such that it is at least equal to the page fault rate. So we want to basically say that if page fault takes 10 milliseconds, I want to at least have that interval so I don't see any page faults for at least that much interval. Okay, so this is how you pick T. We have just 1 minute, so I'll do this slide and end there. Okay, so now you have to ask, how do I compute the working set? Okay, if you say I'm going to track every time you do a memory access, I'm going to write that page into some list and say, oh, here is my list, it is 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, then you have a working set, but as you can imagine, that's expensive. Every time you access, you have to update this list, which is stored in memory. Okay? So this is a good concept, but computing the working set, you go back to the same efficiency problem, saying you want to do this in an efficient way. So you can't just go and say, I'm going to maintain a list and keep updating a list as I access pages and so on and so forth. Okay? So simple idea is, rather than actually compute the working set, I am going to use the page faulting of a process as an approximation to see is the process happy or not happy. Okay? So we say, on an average I want a page fault rate of some value. Okay? It shouldn't fault more than once a minute. I'm just picking a number, once a minute. Okay? So then you track the page fault rate. Okay? If you find a process that is faulting more than that average threshold, then you say this is an unhappy process, it doesn't have enough memory, give it some more frames. Okay? And if you assign a process that's faulting far less than that, you say this process is happier than it needs to be, I'm going to take some frames. Right? Okay? So here is basically what you see. So tracking page faults is much more efficient than tracking the working set. Page faults are anyway a rare occurrence, and a page fault takes 25 milliseconds to service. I can update a counter in microseconds. Okay, so I can keep track of, keep a counter for every process and say this is the rate at which it is faulting. Okay? And then I basically say, so the goal should be the system-wide mean time between page faults is the time it should take. So basically you shouldn't fault more than some average rate. And if you are built, so you will have a threshold, upper watermark and a high watermark and a low watermark. If your page fault rate is below a low watermark, more memory than you need. I take some away. Okay. If your page fault rate is higher than high watermark, you have way too many faults, I'm going to give you more memory. Okay, so you try to be somewhere within this bound, you are supposed to be happy. In this case, you have enough memory to keep your working set in RAM. Okay. So this is a crude approximation of actually computing the working set and saying that I will give you that much memory. You just track. What is the process doing? Is it paging too frequently? If so, it needs more memory. This is how you do it. Okay? Now, if you go back to the thrashing problem, if every process is thrashing, has too many page faults, there's no process you can take away memory and give to some other process. Okay? This is why you're overcommitted. You can't make anyone happy anymore. Everyone is unhappy. So there's nobody you can take memory away. Okay? So this is why this you have to avoid somehow. Okay, so we'll stop here for today. There's one slide left.
Random way to go.